Hello everyone, and welcome back to Spoonful of Sugar. This episode is written by myself, possibly my second to last episode. Hope you enjoy. Hello future doctors, you're tuning into Spoonful of Sugar, the podcast made for and by medical students, where we break down topics into bite-sized pieces for your success. I'm your host, Bilal Rana, third year at Western U, and today we're going to review barbiturates and benzodiazepines. I'll be asking questions throughout and reinforce them at the end with a quick review. Don't worry if you get these wrong on the first or even second go around. This topic is honestly made way more confusing than it needs to be, in my opinion. So what I've done in this episode is I've taken the highest yield information and put them in this episode. So let's begin our discussion with barbiturates. First off, what are they exactly? So they have two uses, one of which is a central nervous system depressant, and the other is for induction of anesthesia. Specific barbiturates for that. If you want to know more about barbiturates and its relationship to anesthesia, I would refer you over to Tanya's episode, which was released recently about anesthetic agents. It's very high yield, strongly recommend listening to it. I do want to mention that barbiturates are largely not in use anymore, so for the purposes of board examinations, it won't be as high yield as benzodiazepines, but it's still good to know about. Now, what about the mechanism of action for barbiturates? What are they? So the mechanism of action is that barbiturates are GABA-A agonists. Now, very likely you won't need to know the different subtypes of GABA receptors, but for the sake of completion, I'm going to mention GABA-A. And what exactly does it do to the GABA? So what it does, and what I'm referring to, is that it increases the duration of chloride influx. Now, chloride is negatively charged, so when it goes inside the neuron, it'll decrease the amount of neuron firing. And that is the desired effect that you're looking for. This is in contrast to benzodiazepines, the mechanism of which we'll discuss later. Knowing that barbiturates are a CNS depressant, what can you expect the uses of barbiturates to be? Yeah, you can expect it to be used for sedation, as I mentioned earlier, it can be used for anesthesia, and the other uses for seizures. Now, everything that I just discussed is some general information for barbiturates. What's more high yield are what happens when you get intoxication or barbiturates, what happens when you withdraw from barbiturates, and various pharmacokinetics about them. So we're going to talk about those now. What would you expect to happen in a barbiturate intoxication? So one of the key things that you're going to want to know is acute respiratory depression. So in addition to being a CNS depressant, barbiturates can also act as a respiratory depressant, meaning you're not breathing as much. And what would the treatment of this be? So this is the problem with barbiturates. They cause acute respiratory depression, but it doesn't have an antidote, at least not one that you need to know for the purposes of board examinations. And in addition to respiratory function, what other organ system can it compromise? Right, the cardiovascular system. So intoxication of barbiturates can go as serious as cardiovascular failure, and that's one of the big ones that you're going to want to know. Now, what about withdrawal symptoms? Yeah, withdrawal symptoms that you can expect are delirium, hallucinations, or even seizures. Now, two of the highest yield barbiturates that you're going to want to know are phenobarbital and thiopental, especially thiopental. Now, barbiturates have a key enzyme interaction that you're going to want to know. Do you know which one that is? Barbiturates are inducers of the cytochrome P450 system. That's pretty high yield, you're going to want to know that. In case you're curious, I'll tie in another high-yield concept of other CYP450 inducers. So in addition to barbiturates, you want to know about St. John's wort, carbamazepine, rifampin, alcohol, specifically chronic alcohol use, phenytoin, griseyl fulvin, and sulfonylureas. So earlier I mentioned that thiopental is one of the higher-yield barbiturates you want to know, and that's because it is the one responsible for anesthesia induction. This is due to one of its properties, namely that it is highly lipid soluble. That's one thing you're going to want to know. Now, even more high yield than that, and probably the highest yield thing to talk about barbiturates, is how thiopental is metabolized. So how is it metabolized? Okay, so it is a bit of a trick question. So thiopental isn't exactly metabolized, more so it is redistributed. And what happens with thiopental is it starts rapidly because of its lipid solubility, and it also wears off rapidly due to drug redistribution in skeletal muscles and adipose tissue. Very high yield, you're going to want to know this. And lastly, another barbiturate that you may want to know is primidone. Can you recall what primidone is used for? So primidone is primarily used for tremors. Propranolol is a better option unless there is a contraindicated to a beta blocker that would indicate somebody needing to use primidone. So a high yield contraindication to beta blockers would be asthma. Something to know. Okay, now we're going to move on to the majority of our discussion, and that's going to center around benzodiazepines. So similar to barbiturates, they act as a CNS depressant, but the mechanism of action is going to be different. Do you know what the mechanism of action here is? So it's also a GABA A agonist, but it works a little bit differently. While barbiturates increase the duration of the chloride channel opening, the benzodiazepines increase the frequency of the chloride channel influxing, right? So the way people remember this, you've probably heard this before, barbiturates, barbituration, duration. So it increases the duration of the chloride channel, whereas benzodiazepines increase the frequency. And what are some key uses for benzodiazepines? So if it was hard to think of just one, you'd be correct. There are a lot. Some of the really key ones you're going to want to know is that benzodiazepines can be used for anxiety. I say can be because benzos are highly addictive. First line would be what instead? SSRIs and SNRIs. You'd rather use those for anxiety than benzodiazepines if you can. Another key use is alcohol withdrawals. Very, very important to know that benzodiazepines are indicated in alcohol withdrawals. Think about it this way. The mechanism of action for benzodiazepines and alcohol is the same. And one of my attendings for addiction medicine, he would refer to benzodiazepines as alcohol in pill form. And so if somebody's withdrawing from alcohol, you're going to need to give them more alcohol. But rather than give them something like alcohol that has hangover side effects, you just give them benzodiazepines because that does not have a hangover associated with it. So yeah, benzodiazepines are alcohol in pill form without the hangover. You can possibly see why those are addictive. Other key uses for benzodiazepines, IV benzodiazepines in particular, are indicated in the treatment of status epilepticus. And then you have the regular benzodiazepines, so the PO diazepines can also be used for sleep. But I would caution against those because, again, they are highly addictive. Now, benzodiazepine being a highly addictive drug, you're going to want to know about what happens when somebody is intoxicated on benzodiazepines. So what are some of the symptoms that you can expect? So I'll give you a hint. Recall that benzodiazepines are alcohol in pill form. Now can you tell me what kind of symptoms you can expect? Yeah, some key ones would be altered mental status, slurred speech, ataxia. And as I mentioned, it kind of sounds a lot like alcohol, and some of these intoxicant symptoms sound like barbiturates. The mechanism is almost identical. For the purposes of board examinations, alcohol intoxication is more likely to have abnormal vital signs. Very likely you will not need to know that for the purposes of step one. So long as you know the symptoms of benzodiazepine intoxication, a multiple choice question will most likely not force you to choose between one or the other. And probably not as high yield, but for the sake of completion, I'll mention, withdrawal from benzodiazepines can cause what? So remember, it's alcohol without the hangover, but there's still going to be something. The big ones that are really common are rebound anxiety and seizures. The other one is insomnia, probably not as high yield, but I figured I'd mention it there. I should mention that because benzodiazepines are highly addictive and they have all these side effects, that's a big reason why these medications are not given to the elderly. For the record, I can't think of a single question that I've had where there's an elderly patient on the question stem, and in the multiple choice they have one of the options is benzodiazepines, and it being the correct answer. Usually it isn't. Now, circling back to withdrawals, how would you treat benzodiazepine withdrawal? So for the purposes of USMLE step 1, flumazenil will be your go-to. And what is the mechanism of action of flumazenil? It's a benzodiazepine receptor antagonist. Now that might sound a little strange considering everything I talked up until this point is about GABA-A, and you'd be correct. When I say flumazenil is a benzodiazepine receptor antagonist, what I mean to say is that within the GABA-A receptor, there is a specific site for benzodiazepines, and flumazenil targets that part. Okay, the next section concerning benzodiazepines is arguably the part that trips up students the most. This is because when you look up information about it, you'll probably get some conflicting information. And specifically, I'm referring to the short, medium, and long-acting nature of the benzodiazepines, and which is which. Before I talk about that, there's one question I realize I should have asked you earlier. So benzodiazepines are metabolized by which organ? They are metabolized by the liver. And there is an exception to this rule. There are three benzodiazepines that are not metabolized by the liver. Do you know which one those are? Lorazepam, oxazepam, and temazepam. The mnemonic that people use is LOT, L-O-T. So lorazepam, oxazepam, and temazepam. Okay, so now let's talk about which of the benzodiazepines are short, medium, and long acting. Again, this section is hella annoying. I've seen several areas on Anki and research that conflict with each other. What I'm going to do is give you the short and sweet. It'll answer the majority of your questions. Key thing you're going to want to know are which ones are short and which ones are long acting. And if you recognize those ones, then you'll be able to recognize the medium acting ones. So the short and the long acting are more important. So let's start with the short acting. So what are the short acting benzodiazepines? So they are alprazolam, triazolam, oxazepam, and midazolam. The mnemonic here is ATOM, A-T-O-M. Easy way to remember that is, you know, ATOM is the smallest building block of nature. And so ATOM, A-T-O-M, alprazolam, triazolam, oxazepam, and midazolam. The key thing that you want to know about these is that they, because they are short-acting, they are highly addictive. And what are the long-acting benzodiazepines that you know of? So two high-yield ones that are good to know. Chlordiazepoxide and diazepam. Chlordiazepoxide is probably the easiest one to remember of the bunch because it has the longest name. Diazepam is a bit more tricky. And what are long-acting benzodiazepines really good for? They are really helpful in the setting of alcohol withdrawal, which we'll talk about a little more in detail in just a bit. And lastly, the medium-acting benzodiazepines. How do you remember these? So there are a bunch. The way I remember them is I look at the name, and within the name of the benzodiazepine, you'll either see the word maze, naze, or raze. So M-A-Z-E, N-A-Z-E, or R-A-Z-E. So let's go over some examples. Temazepam. So if you were to spell that out, T-E-M-A-Z-E, you see the M-A-Z-E in there? So that's a medium acting one. Clonazepam, spell that out, you can see that there's an N-A-Z-E, that's also medium acting. Flurazepam, R-A-Z-E, that's a medium acting. So anytime you see maze, naze, or raise, that's a medium acting benzodiazepine. Rarely will you be asked questions about these. You will usually be asked questions about short and long acting, which is why I mentioned that you should know those, and then the medium will come naturally. So one point of confusion, however, is that one of the examples I gave for medium-acting benzodiazepines is temazepam. Now, if you recall from our mnemonic earlier about short-acting benzodiazepines, the mnemonic was ATOM. So that was A-T-O-M. So then that can be confusing. So is the T in ATOM triazolam or is it temazepam? That's when the mnemonic can be very helpful. That's when you look at the spelling and you see temazepam and then you say, okay, well, that has maze in it, so that must be medium. Therefore, the short-acting one is triazolam. So that's an easy way to help you remember which one is which. So So we'll review this again once we end this episode, but just real quickly, the short acting ones are Atom, A-T-O-M, Alprazolam, Triazolam, Oxazepam, Midazolam, long acting, Chlordiazepoxide, Epoxide, Diazepam, and then medium ones, just remember Maze, Naze, and Raze. So examples I gave are Temazepam, Clonazepam, Flurazepam. Okay, and a discussion of benzodiazepines would not be complete without a discussion of alcohol withdrawal and what the symptoms entail. So if you know what the symptoms are, then you can recognize, okay, I'm going to need a benzodiazepine for this. So alcohol withdrawal symptoms happen over a specific time course. The first set of symptoms usually happen within the first 6 to 24 hours. What kind of symptoms would you expect here? So basic symptoms that you can expect: anxiety, insomnia, tremors, diaphoresis, palpitations, some gastrointestinal upset. They're very much oriented, but they're just feeling a little shaky, a little anxious, okay? The next set of symptoms, these are a bit more serious, right? This happens within the course of 12 to 48 hours. Can you think of what symptoms would occur here? So a big one you're going to want to know are seizures. They can have normal seizures or they can have generalized tonic-clonic seizures. Another one that you want to be familiar with is this term called alcoholic hallucinosis. And this is when the patients will be experiencing visual, auditory, or even tactile hallucinations. The vital signs will still be stable here, so that's a key thing to note. It isn't until it moves on to the last set of symptoms within the 48 to 96 hour mark is when it gets really serious. What would this be called? Delirium tremens. And when I say serious, I mean really serious. This is lethal, right? So the symptoms that you're going to want to know here are confusion, agitation, fever, tachycardia, hypertension, diaphoresis, hallucinations. Now that all doesn't sound too bad, but when delirium tremens is happening, these symptoms of, fever, tachycardia, I mean, these are really, really bad fever and tachycardia symptoms. The confusion is terrible. The agitation is horrendous. Like, you'll know it on the question stem when you see it. And real quickly, I'll ask you a question. If you do recognize any of these signs or symptoms, how would you treat them? If you said benzodiazepine, you'd be correct. If you said long-acting benzodiazepine, you're even more correct. And if you could think of some names, chlordiazepoxide or diazepam, you're even more correct. So that's kind of how you want to be thinking about this. So the last concept that I want to talk about is sleep. Benzodiazepines can be used for sedation, and there are a specific type of benzodiazepines, specifically quote-unquote non-benzodiazepines, that are actually used for sleep. And we're going to be talking about two types of those. We're going to be talking about the quote-unquote non-benzodiazepines ones, and then we're going to talk about sleep medications that are actually not benzodiazepines. And you'll see why I'm making that delineation. So let's first talk about the quote-unquote non-benzodiazepine hypnotics. These ones are less likely to cause tolerance and withdrawal symptoms. They still do. So that's just something you want to keep in the back of your head. Some key names that you're going to want to know. Can you think of some key names? Zolpidem and Zaleplon. Key thing you're going to want to know about these is metabolism. Is it slow or is it fast? It's pretty fast. Okay, and what is the mechanism of action? GABA-A agonist. So kind of as we mentioned earlier, the GABA-A agonist has a lot of side effects. This is one of the medications that you want to avoid in the elderly. Okay, and because zolpidem and zaleplon are rapidly metabolizing, what do you think it would help you with? Would it help you fall asleep or would it help you stay asleep? It would probably only help you fall asleep, right? Because the medication is going to wear off pretty quickly. If you want to stay asleep, you're going to want a non-benzodiazepine hypnotic with a longer half-life. Can you think of a name that you're going to want to know? Isopoclone. So isopoclone helps you fall asleep and stay asleep. Okay? Now, if for whatever reason you want to reverse the effects of the non-benzodiazepines, what would you use? You would use the same medication as the benzodiazepine one. Flumazenil. So if you want to reverse the effect of benzodiazepines, use flumazenil. If you want to reverse the effects of these quote-unquote non-benzodiazepines, you also use flumazenil. You probably see why I'm using the quote-unquote, because even though they're quote-unquote non-benzodiazepines, they act on the same medication, they can be addictive, and they are to be avoided in the elderly. Now, if you want some legit sleep medications that aren't benzodiazepine-affiliated in any way, there are two things that you're going to want to know. The first one are the medications melatonin and remeltion. So what are the mechanisms of actions for these? So these act on the melatonin receptors, MT1 and MT2. Where are these receptors located? In the suprachiasmatic nucleus of the hypothalamus. And these medications are actually safe for the elderly. The other ones that you're going to want to know, these are some newer medications. I haven't seen a whole lot of questions about these. Suvorexant and daridorexant. What are the mechanism of actions for these? So these are orexin antagonists. It's kind of in the name, suvorexant and daridorexant. These are orexin antagonists. Okay, let's round out this episode with two practice questions. Question number one, we have a 46-year-old male who's undergoing an elective cholecystectomy. Several hours after the uneventful procedure, he experiences feelings of restlessness and diaphoresis. Physical examination also reveals a resting tremor. What would you expect to see in his patient history? You could probably imagine his patient history would have some alcohol use disorder. What you're seeing here are some of the early symptoms of alcohol withdrawal. Recall that some of the symptoms are anxiety, insomnia, tremors, diaphoresis, palpitations, gastrointestinal upset, but generally patients have intact orientation. With this patient, he's experiencing the restlessness, the diaphoresis, as well as the tremors. Now, how would you treat this? Right, you would use a benzodiazepine. Recall that the benzodiazepine alcohol, the same mechanism, minus the hangover effect, so that's good. And if you had to choose, if you're given the option, you want to choose a long-acting benzodiazepine. Can you recall some of the names that we talked about? There are two. Chlordiazepoxide and diazepam. So one of the common presentations of alcohol withdrawal that you'll want to know is in the post-operative setting. That is why I asked this question. The implication here is that the patient underwent a prolonged period without alcohol. So you can just think about what the patient's going through. There's a pre-op, the operation itself, the post-op, all of that. You know, several hours have probably passed since his last drink, hence the withdrawals. Okay, next question. We have a 38-year-old female with 7 months of nervousness, irritability, and insomnia. She is worried about her recent promotion at Raytheon and stays up several hours at night wondering how she can balance her parenting responsibilities with her job. What pharmacotherapy would you start this patient on? This is a quick little blurb of the question, but you could probably guess that this patient has generalized anxiety disorder. And the first line is not a benzodiazepine. I've gotten burned on this before. It's not a benzodiazepine. Don't go straight for it. You're going to want to look for SSRIs or SNRIs. And usually it's not enough to just know the class of medication, you're also going to want to know the name. So by way of review, some SSRIs that you want to know, citalopram, escitalopram, fluoxetine, paroxetine, sertraline, and a low-yield example, fluvoxamine. You probably won't see that. And then some examples of SNRIs, venlafaxine and duloxetine. All right, now let's do one final review. We'll start with the barbiturates. These are CNS depressants and anesthetic agents. Largely not in use anymore, so it won't be as high yield, but you'll probably want to know the pharmacokinetics. That tends to get asked a lot more. It's a GABA agonist, a GABA A agonist to be particular, increasing the duration, not the frequency, the duration of chloride influx, resulting in decreased neuron firing. Barbiturates are primarily used for sedation and seizures. Intoxication can cause acute respiratory depression without an antidote and even cardiovascular failure. Withdrawal can cause delirium, hallucinations, and seizures. Examples of barbiturates that you're going to want to know, phenobarbital and thiopental. These have an interaction with P450 in that they are inducers of P450. Thiopental in particular is really good at induction of anesthesia. It's highly lipid soluble and has a rapid onset and falls off pretty quickly due to its drug redistribution in skeletal muscles and adipose tissue. And primidone is particularly used in tremors, although propranolol is a better option unless that is contraindicated. And an example of a contraindication to a beta blocker like propranolol would be asthma. And real quick, since I like to be thorough, some key P450 inducers you want to know, in addition to barbiturates: St. John's wort, carbamazepine, rifampin, chronic alcohol use, phenytoin, greaseofulvin, and sulfonylureas. After this, we talked extensively about benzodiazepines. They also act on the GABA-A receptor. They increase the frequency of the chloride channel influx. They are used for anxiety, but recall from our question, SSRIs and SNRIs are first line. You'll mainly see benzodiazepines for the purposes of board examinations in the setting of alcohol withdrawals. That's going to be the key use that you want to know. You can also see them for status epilepticus and sleep, but they're highly addictive. And for status epilepticus, there are a bunch of other medications you're going to want to know, so that's a topic on its own. Intoxication for benzodiazepines: altered mental status, slurred speech, ataxia. Sounds a lot like alcohol intoxication because they do act on the same receptor. For the purposes of board examinations, alcohol intoxication is typically more unstable vital signs, but you won't need to know how to differentiate between the two for the purposes of your examination. Withdrawal from benzodiazepines can cause rebound anxiety, seizures, and insomnia. And because of all these side effects, you don't want to use these in the elderly. If you are to reverse the effects of benzodiazepines, you would use flumazenil. It's a benzodiazepine receptor antagonist. Recall again, when I say benzodiazepine receptor antagonist, what I mean to say is it acts on the benzodiazepine receptor section of the GABA-A receptor. We also talked briefly about its metabolism. Benzodiazepines are metabolized by the liver, with the exception of lorazepam, oxazepam, and temazepam. Remember the mnemonic LOT. Then we talked extensively about short, medium, and long-acting benzodiazepines. The short ones are memorized by the mnemonic ATOM: alprazolam, triazolam, oxazepam, midazolam. These are highly addictive. And then we have the long-acting ones: chlorodiazepoxide and diazepam. These are best used for alcohol withdrawal. And then, just kind of fill in the gaps right there, the medium ones are memorized by maze, naze, and rays. So some examples I gave are temazepam, clonazepam, flurazepam. So just look at the spelling and you can tell whether it's a medium-acting one or not. We also talked about alcohol withdrawal symptoms. So we have the early symptoms within the first 6 to 24 hours. Mild withdrawal, you know, anxiety, insomnia, tremors, diaphoresis, palpitations, GI upset, intact orientation. Seizures and alcoholic hallucination usually come next within about 12 to 48 hours. So you're usually looking at either single or multiple tonic-clonic seizures. And then for hallucinosis, you can look at visual, auditory, or tactile hallucinations. And then lastly, you have delirium tremens, the really, really serious one, happening about 48 to 96 hours after, with confusion, agitation, fever, tachycardia, hypertension, diaphoresis. And of course, these patients will also experience hallucinations. They are really out of it. You'll recognize these when you see them. Then we talked about the quote-unquote non-benzodiazepines. These are less likely to cause tolerance and withdrawal symptoms, but they still do. Zaleplon and zolpidem were the ones we talked about, metabolized by the liver. They act very rapidly on the GABA-A receptor. They are agonists. You avoid them in elderly. Because of their rapid induction, they're useful for falling asleep, but not so much for staying asleep. Isopoclone is your go-to if you want to fall and stay asleep. If for whatever reason you want to reverse these, just like benzodiazepines, you use flumazenil. And then the last medications we talked about for sleep: melatonin and romelteon. These act on the melatonin 1 and 2 receptors in the suprachiasmatic nucleus of the hypothalamus, much safer for elderly. And the other ones are suvorexin and deridorexin, which act as orexin antagonists. Okay, that is all. Thank you for tuning into this episode. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, or you want to make an episode yourself, please visit our website at spoonfulofsugar.org. Good luck with studying, and remember that if you ever have an SOS moment while studying, Spoonful of Sugar is always here to help the medicine go down.